in the Milwaukee, Rocky, Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Bellevue, Sweet Dreams, that's why I lose my
Stroudsburg, Healdsburg. You know, I am wearing Tommy John's today.
You are?
Yeah, I finally bought some. And
they're like
say,
a second degree sponsor.
Yes. And they are comfortable. They're quality.
They sponsor the podcast we listen to.
I mean, I don't know if this is generational or not, but I find that the older I get, the more willing I am to pay money for underwear. Like, I grew up in an era when it was like 12 pack of Tidy Whitey's Shut Up Kid, you know. And now I'm like, you know, that's where I kind of care the most about it being comfortable.
Well, it's shoes. I learned the hard part of with shoes this summer. I bought a pair of 50% off bargain bin hiking shoes, and I basically had to not walk for a month because my ankle was hurting so bad. It was awful.
Yeah, shoes. I'm gonna add socks. Shoes, socks, and underwear. Listen, kids, splurge on that. You know, get your t-shirts from Goodwill, but those three things.
yeah. Don't mess around.
I hear a high pitched whine. Is that?
Yeah, it's the laundry machine.
Is it cleared for takeoff?
It's they're taking off right about now. Do you want me to go and check to see? Is it that bad? It's a little bad.
It's a little bad.
Okay.
Is it going to end soon? Well, folks, while Taylor has gone on mute, let me tell you that we plan today to talk about canvassing and some of my experiences in Wilkes-Barre canvassing. And we also hope to get into a little bit of what we call protect the results and we go together, which is the overall framework of making sure that every vote is counted. I see Taylor's back. From grounding the dryer.
it's the washer. It's ended right now though.
Okay.
This is the world we live in.
Well, welcome to Barnstorming.
Yes, welcome to Barnstorming.
Our usual. You know, we really bring you into our lives.
yeah, absolutely. You know, I was going back and watching some of our old live stream videos that we did, and oh man,
the quality's going up every time.
Quality goes up every time.
I mean, even if it doesn't, it does.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting better every time we do it. We're experts at an amateur activity, as Jordy has pointed out.
Wait, have I really? That's so Jordy. I thought, oh, Taylor, that's so clever.
No. Oh. Yeah, no. Oh, you said that in one of our recent episodes. It could have been our last one. but I it's so funny right now. I'm applying for a lot of jobs and I feel like a lot of my resumes, I'm very good at this very particular thing that doesn't really have any bearing on.
Well, at least you're a professional at eccentric activities as opposed
I'm a professional at a number of,
instead of an expert at an amateur activity.
yeah, exactly.
All I'm right.
A professional hobbyist.
Yeah. you know, this is Jordy. I'm in my living room, just had some coffee. It's very early for Jordy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's almost early for Taylor, which means it's very early for Jordy.
Yeah, that's right. and we were talking a little bit about this theme of hypocrisy. Taylor and I have both in different points been in the crosshairs of local conservatives, Republicans, those kinds of folks, mostly on social media, and they it seems like their first, second, third, and last line of attack is that we're being hypocrites. Does that sound fair, Taylor?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've noticed it like broadly with a lot of conservatives. Like it seems like their number one attack is that we are being hypocritical.
I mean, I will say, just, you know, because I'm self-aware, like I do that too, the left does it too. It's like with originalism,
it's, you know, example. Yeah, I mean, it is, yeah. Like I am bothered by hypocrisy, but honestly, like the thing that I think I get most upset about is like people being disingenuous and like disingenuous people and corruption. Like corruption bothers me a lot. And then also like when people like have disingenuous arguments, like about climate change, for example, you know, like,
right.
Oh, look at the snowball, you know?
Right. You
like that bothers me a lot more than hypocrisy, because I mean, I think there's like a certain amount of hypocrisy baked in the system.
I was about to say, just in terms of, you know, spinning some amateur sociology here, like, I think, you know, for me, I'm like, you're being hypocritical is like a criticism to level, but it's not about the core character, especially in the political arena, right? Because, you know, I know that I'm probably vulnerable to it, because it's like the system, you know, the world we live in forces us to be somewhat hypocritical sometimes. You know, I don't always have the same value set for every single situation. Like, there is some pragmatism baked into how I respond to things. Does that make sense? And I think for them, this is my one tiny maybe insight, is like, if they're coming from a much more totalizing, like,
value, yeah, system, like no relative moral. What's that?
Moral relativism.
Yeah, no. They're coming from an angle of no moral relativism, and
yeah, I mean, that's maybe, that.
Maybe we are. I mean, I don't know. I don't. You know, I don't know quite where I stand on moral relativism, but
well, I know where I stand, which is sure. like, yeah. Like a little bit helps you get through the world and deal with its irreducible complexities, but it's not really, it's, you know, again, it's like motor oil. It's something you need to get the engine going, but it's not the engine.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the whole thing is, you know, I was doing a little bit of research actually on the Trump impeachment. And I mean, he was basically threatening military aid and US support in a really volatile region. Didn't actually even deny it, in exchange for campaign favors, and they didn't allow any documents or witnesses into the trial. Mm-hmm. And if you're able to sit here and defend that, mm-hmm. then you know, and then complain that so and so didn't do a tandem filing with the county board, like all right, well, it's just selective outrage. Like, you can't actually care. Like,
yeah, that you know, and so maybe if you want to go back into that trench warfare, that might be a good point to bring up. But let's, can we pivot, because you said something. I had a pivot to Canvas from something you said three sentences ago, but now I forgot what it was. So we really wanted to talk about partly
pivot.
Yeah,
Jordy, you're a master. You could be a basketball player.
No, but yeah, you know, we all know that this has been a weird election season for people who do politics and electoral work, because there's been almost no canvassing. But I started canvassing this week in Luzerne and Lackawanna counties in Northeast PA, which, if you're not from PA, or even if you are, you probably know PA is many people think
NEPA, Northeast NEPA. PA.
Yes, that. But I was going to say, well, you want to set it up as the why those counties matter for the election?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Luzerne County in particular, our international audience might know it from The Office. Or actually, no, that's Lackawanna.
That's Lackawanna.
Yeah, but Luzerne is close. Luzerne, Obama won Luzerne County, which is like centered around the urban area of Wilkes-Barre.
I've been told both are acceptable.
Okay, yeah. I
say Wilkes-Barre.
I don't know. It's like, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if it's caramel or caramel. It's important because Obama won it twice narrowly. It's a traditionally Democratic stronghold. But Obama won it by, or but Trump won it by like 10 or something like that.
I don't
10
know.
10 points.
Quite a bit. For sure.
And, mm-hmm. and in the midterm, Wolf did win Luzerne County. But Bob Casey, I don't think Bob Casey did. You know, and part of that is because that was Lou Barletta's home county, which was Bob Casey's opponent in the 2018 Senate race. But it's
not only that. Lou Barletta was sort of
the Donald Trump.
Yes, he
was of Luzerne County before.
Yeah, he really was. He's a former Democrat who perfected the art of running on white grievances about immigration to propel himself into political power.
Yeah, and longtime political observers might remember Paul Kanjorski, who was the sort of the longtime Luzerne County representative Democrat for like maybe, I don't know, like 30 years or something like that. But anyway,
I love it when we tickle the interest of an audience of seven. Keep going.
Yeah. Well, I just say this because Lou Barletta was running for that congressional seat for many years as a Republican against this Democrat and kept losing, but he's gained traction.
Why it matters.
Yeah, it matters. Yeah. Used to be a strong Democratic stronghold. Well, now it's contested.
Now it's more purple, right? I mean, it's very swingy. And for sure, it's a very typical kind of medium-sized Pennsylvania city. I didn't look up. It's got to be 150 or 1,000 or something like that. Probably more than that. Probably
something like that.
If you include the suburban areas and the down. And I actually learned from a friend of mine who lives there, who's an architect, that a lot of, if you visit, like the downtown's got a really beautiful European style roundabout with a green space. And some really wide boulevards. A lot of that was put in after the floods in 72 because that destroyed a lot. Canvassing has started, and we're doing it, of course, with COVID safety. One part that's
Can you explain what COVID safety canvassing looks like really quickly?
Just sure. First of all, you do not lick the literature before you hand it out.
No.
No more of that. No.
What about the doorknobs?
Yeah.
We used to ring them with our tongue.
Yeah. That,
it really strengthened your immune system.
That's right. And it was uphill both ways every time you visited a house.
Yeah, exactly.
It means we're wearing higher degree of facial protection, so we have actual N95 masks, we're supposed to wear gloves or use hand sanitizer frequently. I opt for the hand sanitizer, so I'm hitting the little bottle every like 20 to 30 minutes. Knock, always be 6 to 7 feet away.
Do you keep it on your belt like a
no, but not a bad idea. I use cargo pants, and I don't care what the fashion used to say. I'm going to be wearing cargo pants till I die because they're very useful and I like all the side pockets. Stay 6 feet away. Those are the main pieces. Also, a lot of these cities in Pennsylvania have a lot of these houses that were used to be single family dwellings that are now multiple apartments. We're just not going into the interior, right? Like normally we would go in and knock on each door. So we're not doing that. With one notable exception that I'll get to.
How do you treat the screen porch?
Haven't hit those yet.
Okay.
I would go in.
That was always my dilemma in Minnesota.
Because
they're kind of screened in, you know.
Right.
And it feels like you're walking into their house, but it's actually
not
their front door, you know?
Yeah. I've never canvassed in Minnesota. So you would go into the screen porch?
I would play that one by ear.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking if it looks like there's a lot of furniture, like it's sort of a lived in part of the house, maybe not. Also, like, were there ever doorbells on the screen porch? Like on the outside?
No, the doorbells are inside. It's kind of a weird hybrid between.
Like, I think if you put the doorbell inside the screen porch, you're inviting people to come in.
Yeah. Have you tried the golf ball, knocking on doors with the golf ball yet?
I haven't because, shocker, I don't own any golf balls.
Just go to the Bucknell driving range.
A good idea. Haven't, but I gotta say, I'm sure that you did it more and longer, or maybe you just have soft hands, but it hasn't been bothering me.
All right, well, how many days have you been canvassing?
This will be my fourth.
Okay.
Week after
day seven, talk to me.
Okay, all right. but just to give you a few highlights, this is just, to me, it's like, one of the things I love about canvassing is it really is like sociology with a microscope and technicolor, right? Like when you walk down a street and you're very attuned, you're not just walking, you see all these little differences, right? A lot of it's cultural capital, a lot of it's reading kind of the natural history of the built landscape. This house, was a pretty nice house and now it's in rougher shape. And it's next to a house where you can, I'm sure I sound classist as hell, but I don't care. You can tell that like the people there are like the porch is like nicely done. It's recently painted. You see these little details, or you walk onto the porch And, you know, you can see there's like an ashtray with like 84 cigarettes, right? So, you know, there's a smoker here who sits outside. So this one street in Wilkes-Barre, like, it was so interesting because like the first building that I parked in the street is like to center it was this beautiful kind of, you know, majestic old style bank, you know, would have had high ceilings, like abandoned, right? And it's not the kind of, you know, it was a neighborhood that was very working class. Didn't seem like a place that a bank would set up a main branch. And I actually didn't even notice this part until I returned to the car, but we parked in front of an Eastern Orthodox synagogue that had been abandoned.
Eastern Orthodox.
No, not Eastern Orthodox. I guess it just said, well, I think it maybe was Orthodox. I think it was the Eastern Orthodox synagogue, like the one on the east side of the town or something.
Okay.
And so that was interesting because the neighborhood, you know, we didn't run into anyone. Like, we were in another neighborhood in Scranton on a different day where there were actually a lot of, what's that little thing on the door jamb that kosher houses have?
Oh, yeah. I know.
And other, you know, other evidence that they were Jewish families. You didn't see any of that on this street. So walking down the street, just, you know, like there were two libertarians, like statistically, that's so rare. And they were within like four houses of each other.
With I wonder black if libertarians congregate.
In Wilkes-Barre, like, or on that street?
No, like, I wonder if the presence of one libertarian makes it likely to...
Well, yeah, and probably backyard, you know, conversations maybe, because they were within about four houses with a Black Lives Matter flag in between, you know? So, like, that little, you know, those little micro moments. And then I got to the end of the street, and we knew that this was there. It was a big public housing complex called Lincoln Plaza. Just thinking about the irony of that, given Trump's loud proclamations that he's possibly Lincoln did more for Black people than Trump.
Yeah.
Jury's still out.
I thought that was a great rebuttal that Biden had, by the way.
Like, yeah.
Abe Lincoln over here.
Yeah, that was really good. Come on, man. Usually you can't get in, right? Like, is that your experience? You can't get into public housing?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to play that one by ear too.
Yeah, well, I mean, this was a high rise, right? So, I mean, it was a complex of like three kinds of buildings. There was like a low rise, like kind of like a motel with each door facing the exterior. There were little bungalow buildings, and then there was this high rise that was, you know, the gold mine that has 10 stories. I mean, usually they say, like, you know, you no solicitation, entrance by permission of the of the manager. And actually, I didn't know if you knew anything about this. Like, it really bugs me. I'm like, why does a public housing authority take it upon itself to shut off residents and citizens from the ability to at least be solicited by people who are doing politics, right? It's like
I feel the same way about gated communities too. It's just like, well,
yeah, I mean, they're private, and this is a public entity cutting citizens off from the public sphere.
Yeah.
Right. It really irks me. And I've been thinking about how to try and deal with it. Anyway, turns out I had met a woman earlier in the day in the parking lot of Rite Aid, was in like an electric wheelchair, and she was chatting with me about what we were doing and why we were going out. She was in the courtyard of this building. I know. And I was really confused about the addresses because everything was Lincoln Plaza and it was numbers like 24 or 823, but there were no building numbers anywhere. And so I saw this group of residents, you know, it was like three women sitting outside. I went up and I was like, and then I saw, I think her name was Diana. I was like, Diana. I was like, oh, hi, I met you earlier. She's like, oh, hi. I was like, can you all explain this to me? And they were explaining like how the addresses worked. And then it turns out the Diana woman like lived there and also was a part-time employee, like a kind of tenant services. And she was like, oh yeah. And she knew everything. She was like, this building, that building, this is how it works, blah,
That's
blah,
great.
Blah. It was so great. And she was like, oh yeah, I live in 100, 102 is the first floor of the second, you know, 304 is the third floor of the fourth. And I was like, oh, 102. She's like, oh, that's my neighbor, Adrian.
Oh yeah. And she probably knew. Yeah, everybody.
She knew everything. And I was like, oh, do you think he'd want to hear from me? And she's like, yeah. I was like, do you think you could let me in? She's like, well, I'm not supposed to. Don't tell them I did. I was like, oh, no, Jose let me in.
That's great.
And so I got in, and it was so great, Taylor. So many
good conversations. First,
good conversations. You know, several folks who were a little, you know.
Maybe. I love it when you get into a good streak, because I feel like when you find like a nice row of good houses, you know, like that, you can just have some great conversations.
Well, and part of it was, I'm sure folks who are in public housing have all kinds of, you know, stressors and things that I haven't experienced, but there was a real sense that like, and maybe it was the ones I talked to outside, but they like were chatty and friendly. And like the old women outside were very like, cause I had literature and they were like, Biden. Oh, one of them was an older one. She's like, he's a cutie. I like him. And she's like, Cartwright. Oh, he's very handsome too. I mean, I was just dying laughing.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
And a lot of the folks that I talked to, they also just seemed like they were just really happy to have someone stop by and care about them, you know?
Yeah. That's nice. So tell me, have you had like many good conversations? Or is it like mostly mediocre, or like what kind of conversations are you having?
Well, because of the universe, this is get out the vote of high potential voters, people who are either new registrants. I mean, pretty good number of new people newly registered, like 10 to 15% of this list is people between 18 and maybe 20 something. And because of the script and how it reads, you know, we know that it's like, it says like, we see that this is the first time you've registered. And they've been interested and enthusiastic. Talked to a guy yesterday who was like 24, doesn't have photo ID, has a social security card. And so we worked out that, you know, he needs to take something with his address the first time he votes. And that one was funny, cause like many people lived in the house, and we knocked on the door and the guy who answered it was Black. And he was like, who are you, what do you all want? And we're like, we're acting together. And he's like, yeah, but which side are you on? And we're like, oh, well, we're supporting Biden. And he's like, okay, great. You know, and his face lit up, and he was, that's like, I'll get the, you know, I can't remember what his name was, you know, Daniel or whatever, you know. So that guy came down, really wanted to talk. A guy I trained who's been canvassing with me, whose name's Ong, he's 28, I think, and he's never voted before. So not only is he registered, he's so fired up, you know, he wanted to come out and canvass. So that's been really great. There was a 13-year-old yesterday who was trying to canvass, and I had to make him be more of a gopher, because I was like, you're not really, you know, no one's going to take you.
Not ready for prime time yet.
Well, plus he had a cute face with still some baby fat, so he couldn't pass for 15. You know, he looked like an 11-year-old knocking on your door. I hope he doesn't hear this. He's a good kid. Yeah, a lot of great conversations. Just a few Trump supporters, like three or four, just a few people who are like, I don't want to talk to you. I mean, Wilkes-Barre, the neighborhoods we've been in, which isn't a cross section, but a lot of South Asian folks, a lot of Patels and Desais, a lot of African-American, a lot of Latinx. I mean, probably 15, 20% of each of those ethnicities, and 40 to 50% white. And probably this is not a good conversation, but it's just so bonkers. I have to share it. Right. So this was in the public housing complex. I go to the door, I knock on it. I can see that the name is Timothy, right? And as the person's opening the door, like it clicks for me that this is somebody who's going through a sex gender transition. You know, there's just sort of all kinds of markers of mixed traditional male and female. You know what I'm saying? like makeup and an Adam's apple. And I was like, oh, is Timothy here? I mean, is does she live here? Because you know, and so the person like responded well to me adapting quickly and was like, well, you know, actually I'm Tina, but that is me. And I was like, oh, great. We start talking, doing this thing. And I was like, so on a scale of 0 to 10, how likely are you to vote? And Tina says, I'm a 0. And I was like, you know, I'm in my head, I'm prepared to kind of talk about why it's important to vote. And I'm talking about how my kids who are teenagers, I'm voting for them. And then Tina says, yeah, I mean, I have a daughter too. She's a Trump supporter. I'm going to vote for Trump too. I mean, I would vote for Trump. And I was just like, you what?
That's really interesting.
You're a trans person. I didn't get into it.
Maybe they were just fucking with you.
No.
You know, Meliot and I actually went back and watched the first debate between Hillary and Trump in 2016 last night. And
wait a minute. She does love you.
It was her idea. She wanted to watch. She wanted to watch.
Sure, the second, it was.
she kind of likes his mannerisms. She thinks he's really funny to watch.
Well, that's true. That's true. I mean,
if you don't have any skin in the game, it's kind of hilarious.
I was about to say if the stakes aren't as high. Yeah, that's true. It is like the longest running political sitcom in history.
Yeah, but he just seems so much more lucid and like with it, and he had such a more cogent message, you know, about factories leaving and how he was a businessman and would like, absolutely, you know, he kept name dropping Wisconsin and Michigan and the Carrier plant in Indiana and Carrier, you know, plant, like,
which is closed down, by the way, if anyone's keeping score.
Yeah. But it actually seemed so much more, it actually really gave me the impression, like, if Trump had run 30 or 40 years ago, he would have been a Democrat, you know?
Oh,
like
God.
As like a classic.
I mean, yes, but then he would have, think of the damage he would have done to us.
Yeah, because, I mean, definitely.
Because he wouldn't have followed through on anything, and he would have been totally corrupt, and, you know, we'd be talking about the Huey Long of the 1980s.
yeah, exactly. Going back to canvassing, though, I always think it's really interesting to get like a really, like a kind of, you have kind of like a heartbeat on the electorate and like what's happening and kind of the mood.
Let me give you a quick example of that. I also ran into a guy because Luzerne has had something like 6,000 mail-in ballots were requested, yeah, or 60,000. And I ran into a guy also in the public housing complex who hadn't gotten his mail-in ballot, had been once or twice to the Board of Elections. He was so dedicated to voting, right? And I tracked down his options. I called him later. We had two conversations, you know, in terms of like heartbeat of the electorate, right? I mean, that's what we want to hear. Like there are a lot of people who are absolutely determined to vote. Absolutely.
And this is the list of people that will probably vote for Biden, but might not vote, right?
Yes.
Yes, and this is high potential voters. Yeah, people that could potentially not vote.
Yeah,
if you're not talking with them and working it through with them.
Yep.
And you're finding enthusiasm.
Huge amounts of enthusiasm, and people are very nice. Yesterday, we knocked on a door and no one was there. It was a contractor who was like fixing up the place, and he was like very kind of almost that New Jersey neep accent. He's like, "Thank you all for what you're doing. This is so great. So glad you're out here. Thank you." You know, and
yeah, that's good.
Yeah, totally good. And another quick story, a guy who wasn't actually on our list, he was sitting outside of one of these high rises that's for seniors. We can't get into any of those facilities, obviously. I mean, we wouldn't even try because of COVID. He was sitting outside. You can, you know, the kind of older man, he said he was 70. And I was like, "You don't look a day over 64. And that cracked him up. and he was one of those guys just talking to everybody, right? Watching the world go by. We started talking. And I was like, "Hey, are you registered to vote?" And he's like, "Yeah, I already voted." So he already voted, right? And then he starts talking about how he fell in this bathtub, broke his hip. He can't walk now. He's trying to learn how to walk again, you know? And I'm like, "That's, you know, I hear you." And I just, you know, we had a few minutes. I was just trying to be a sympathetic voice. I told him about how my father lost his legs and learned how to walk and how hard it was, but, you know, you can do it. He starts crying and saying, "Bless you, thank you." Mentions that he doesn't have any money for food, right? But then he's too damn stupid proud to, like, I tried to get him to give me his phone number to call like a food bank or something. You know, I left him some money because I was just like, "What am I going to do, right? Like, I can't do nothing," you know? And he was just like weeping, and I was like, "It's okay." Like, but yeah, and he voted. He voted.
That's great.
With a mail-in ballot. And so think about what that, you know, as complicated as it's been in Pennsylvania. I have to hop, Taylor. I'm sorry.
It's all good. It's all good. It was good talking with you.
It was good talking with you. And I hope that I'll let you say a last thing, but there is actually, if people hear this and they want to, do this canvassing in NEPA, they're anywhere near there. They can get in touch with me at Jordy@JordyComas.org, or they can go to the Action Together NEPA website, and we can still take people on and train them. And I may even be your trainer, and I'm pretty damn good at it.
All right. Great.
Do you have any last words?
Any last words? No, but
what's your favorite canvas story?
My favorite canvas story? Geez, putting me on the spot here. I have some upsetting ones.
Okay, don't do those. What is your last thoughts?
You know, honestly, I have to say, canvassing is always a fantastic experience. I really like canvassing. I've done so much canvassing and I love it. And it's really hard for the first hour, but then you get into it and you usually have a good time and you talk with somebody at least once an hour that it's pretty nice. And you know, I've heard it described as bird watching with short democracy breaks. and that resonates with my experience of it. And you never know. You could meet somebody that changes your life. I've had so many good conversations with people, like really decent people. Yeah. And it's a good thing to do.
I've heard it described as entering a three-dimensional Walt Whitman poem.
That's great. I like that.
I just made it up now, so I just heard it now.
It's more like, I mean, it depends on where you're going, but it can be more, it can be some, yeah, I don't know. It depends upon where you're going. And I have to say, like, I have a lot much more fun when I'm sitting there chatting with people like in that public housing unit. Like I've done some bougie canvassing in the Georgia, like in the Atlanta suburbs, you know, where you're going up to McMansions and it's awful. And they usually call the police on you. That's horrible. But talking with middle-class people in Luzerne County, that sounds like a blast to me.
And, you know, it also, I think it's a way to actually, it's like a communion with the ideal it's communing with the ideal of a democracy where we all matter, because like you said, like most of us for different reasons, we live lives where we don't actually get that much of a chance to talk to people who are very different from us.
You yeah. know?
And
I did a lot of canvassing in trailer parks actually for Bernie Sanders. And the amount that I took away from that, I learned so much from them that, you know, much more than they learned from me in doing that really shaped my, mm-hmm. shaped my political ideas, I think.
Yeah. I was about to make a really off color joke, but I'm going to hate it.
Yeah, please.
All right. So I'm going to hit end. And